just a moment ago, you read Ephesians 2, 11 through 18, and I don't think I need to persuade us that the purpose in Jesus Christ's coming was to create peace. Now, I know he said, I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword. But the context of that indicates that he's talking about the sword that separates the kingdom of darkness from the kingdom of light. But in the kingdom of light, there is peace. And it is the major characteristic, it's the prime and ultimate characteristic of the kingdom of God. I don't think I have to go into that further. I think you agree with that. Is this a bit loud? I think it may be a... Okay, I'm hearing myself preach and I just don't... When Gandhi, through his efforts, won independence for India, independence from Britain. He won the independence, but he had a problem on his hands. He had on one hand the Hindu, on the other hand he had the Muslim. He made this absolute historic statement when he was confronted with the need to bring peace between these two groups. Gandhi said, I hope that the Muslims and the Hindus will treat each other in a Christian manner. You see, he had been reading the Sermon on the Mount for years, and I don't want to overemphasize it, but I think he read the Sermon on the Mount every day for years. Well, what is this Christian manner that he mentions? What is the Christian manner that he was hoping the Muslims would and the Hindu would exhibit toward one another? Well, it's just Jesus Christ, his life and his teachings. He had been reading about them. He knew what Jesus was advocating. He knew that Jesus' initiative was a peace initiative. And so that was the simplicity of the whole thing, and it was very brought down into concrete terms. In the seventh beatitude, I want us to notice it this morning. I believe that the seventh beatitude is the apex of the beatitudes. It's not the eighth one. It's not the first one. Because you must experience the first seven or the first six before you come to the seventh one of peacemaking, before you be able to make peace or be a peacemaker. But I want us to look at that. The seventh one today, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Jesus' credentials are impeccable. You know him well enough to know that he knows what he's talking about. I'm going to mention four principles this morning that you'll be able to take home with you. You'll remember them. The first one is take the first step. In making peace is take the first step. So the number one, take the first step. Say that with me. Number one, take the first step. So you can't forget that one. Take the first step. Be the initiator. Now, Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, says if you are going to offer your gift at the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift at the altar and go be reconciled to your brother, and then come back and offer your gift. Oh, he puts such importance on it there. If you remember that your brother has something against you, you've been the one who did the offending. He says, go. But in Matthew, the 18th chapter, he says, if you're the one who has been offended, what are you supposed to do if you've been the one to be offended? He says, go. So whether you are the offender or the offended, if you're going to be a peacemaker, you're going to have to take the initiative. Jesus expects you to go whether you're the offended or the offender. Now that puts the ball in your court. It puts the ball in your court if you're going to be a peacemaker instead of a peace lover. Now there's a difference between being a peace lover and a peacemaker. Peace lovers don't stir the water up. Peace lovers let sleeping dogs lie. But if you're the offended or the offender, he says you've got to go and thank God we've got people in this church that are like that. Let me tell you a story about Mike Anderson. There's a man over where I preached a couple of 3 years ago, Belton. In Belton, Texas, there's a man there named Larry Doak. And he came in my office one day and he said, I have received a call from a friend of mine, Mike Anderson, a business associate from out in Phoenix, Arizona. And he said, the man said to me, Larry, he said, I have been diagnosed with liver cancer. And he said, I have no faith. But he said, in being around you, I know that you do. Would you please fly out here immediately and share your faith with me? And Larry said, well, certainly. He dropped everything, got the next flight, took off for Phoenix, Arizona, spent that rest of that day on into the night about 2 o'clock the next morning sharing his faith with this man. It broke through his unbelief. The man accepted Jesus Christ, was baptized a few weeks later, but that's not the point I want you to notice. I want you to notice what he did in between. He told Larry, he said, Larry, I can't expect God to forgive me unless I have forgiven other people. Now, he came to this on his own. He said, I can't expect God to forgive me unless I forgive other people. The first thing he did was he called his mother up, with whom he hadn't spoken in 20 years. She had abused him as a child. And I won't go into the details because I wasn't there, but it was significant enough and harsh enough that he had not spoken to his mother in 20 years. He called her up and said, Mom, I want to take you to dinner. He took the initiative. So he went by and picked her up, drove to the restaurant, pulled up into the parking lot, and his mother on the spot died of a heart attack right there. He didn't get to finish what he started, but he did enough of it. She knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing. God knew what he was doing. And the man just simply started with his mother, with the one whom he considered as having offended him the most. But here's what else he did. He made a list of all the people that he had felt like he had offended, or those who had offended him. Now, this is a man that's not even, he's just in the birth process. But he knew that he had to get this out of the way before he could come to God and really with genuineness. So he made a list of all the people that he had injured or who had been injured by him, and he called up every one of them. Called up every one of them and said, I want you to forgive me for what I did to you last year. I want you to forgive me for what I did, I cheated you, or whatever it was that he confessed. And people were just astonished. So much so that a man called him and said, Larry, what's happening to you? What's happened? And he told him, he said, I'm becoming a Christian. I believe in Jesus Christ, and this is what he wants me to do. So, by the way, the man said, well, tell me about it. And so he shared his faith with that man. And so it spread. It's just spread from Larry Doak to Anderson, and then to just spreading, and it keeps spreading. I called him this week and I said, Mike, how are you doing? He said, I'm doing fine. But he knew the principle of reconciliation. It had to be accomplished. Well, so take the first step. That's one of the things. And you know what your task and mine is to do? Make you a list. Back of one of these cards. Make you a list of people that have offended you or that you have offended. And you know, here would be a very unusual experience. We haven't eaten the supper yet. You know what Jesus would advocate? He would say, don't eat that supper yet until you have gone and gotten it right with the person that you have a grudge against. I remember some years ago while preaching at the A&M church in College Station, my son John was living with us at the time, going to school there, and he and I got crossed with each other that week. And it was serious enough that he was offended, and I knew I had offended him. Well, here came Sunday. And here came the service, and here came time to worship. And I got nervous. And I started sweating my palms, and I knew, I told John, I said, John, go with me if you would, go to the office with me. And we went in, I shut the door. And I said, I know I offended you this week, and I'm sorry. Would you forgive me? Two grown men stood there crying in each other's arms. The issue had been resolved. We both went back, sat down, and ate this supper. And don't think that supper wasn't meaningful. That's what he's wanting us to do. He said, before you go to church, before you bring your offering, before you offer your sacrifice, stop and go first be reconciled to your brother, and then come and eat the supper. Have you ever had a confession service before the supper? What if we today were, before we eat the supper, what if we just simply stood and looked around and thought, okay, I've been holding this grudge too long, and then we go to that brother and say, would you please forgive me? I'm so sorry. I've held this grudge against you all these years, and I'm sorry. And then what a joyful supper we would have. Mike, what a joyful participation we'd have in that kind of a supper. Number one, take the first step. Number two, go the second mile. Do more than is required. Do more than is asked. You know, sometimes in our dealing with people in benevolence, you know what we do? We whittle them down. We just whittle them down. They come in hurting. They come in embarrassed. They come in need. And we'll say, now, are you sure you need that much? Now, I'm saying this is the way I have experienced in the past dealing with it. And we barter them down, maybe to the lowest common denominator, so that we'll get by with giving them the least that they need in order to go on their way. And we ought not to do that. Go the second mile. I want to read some of the things that, listen to what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. Turn the other cheek. Go the second mile. Let him have your shirt as well. Give to him that asks you. Love your enemies. Pray for those that persecute you. Lend, expecting nothing in return. Greet others beside your brothers. And if not, what are you doing more than others? Jesus requires us to go beyond the first mile. Go the second mile. Yeah, but you're going to get ripped off. I know. We're going to get ripped off. You leave yourself vulnerable. Some people came by the building this week, and I know we risk being ripped off. But let me show you something. There's a man by the name of Paul Healy, an ex-convict, 25 years ago, Searcy, Arkansas, released from jail, came by the church office needing a tire and a tank of gas. So I went with him to the station and told the man to put him on a tire, and we filled him up with gas. But I looked at the other tire on the rear of the car, and it wasn't any better than the one they took off. And I said, Paul, you're not going to get where you're going on that tire. So I said, put another tire on that side. Now, this was the church's money, it wasn't mine, you know. So don't be. But when you think about it, anything you give away is not yours, it's the Lord's. And I said, you're not going to get there on a tank of gas. So we gave him enough money for a second tank of gas. He thanked us and took off down toward BB on the 167 highway. He got to BB, 16 miles down the road. This ex-convict turned around and came into my office, and he said, this is where I'm going to live. He said, I want to live among people who treat each other like this. Now you see, that was a risk, giving him double what he asked, yeah. But that's what Jesus meant when he said, go the second mile. Don't just do what's required. Go beyond that and ask them, are you sure this is what you need? Do you have any other needs?
Well, I'll tell you what, it works. His way works. He knows what he's talking about. Number one, do what? Take the first step. Number two, go the second mile. Number three, don't wear your feelings on your sleeve. You know, Jesus never took offense at what was done to him. You think about it? He never took offense at what was done to him. On one occasion, he said, whoever speaks a word against the Son of Man will be forgiven. But whoever speaks blasphemy against the Holy Spirit will not be forgiven. But against himself, he just simply never took offense, ever. I may have missed it, but I've been studying his life for 40 years. I've never found him taking offense. When Judas came with his soldiers into the Garden of Gethsemane, you know what Jesus called him when Judas came there and led those men to Jesus? He said, Friend, what are you doing here? Or do what you've come for, friend. He just didn't take offense. When he was hanging on the cross, what did he do? He said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. How different that is from the way we often act or react to hurt. How do you react to hurt? We, instead of taking offense only at what was done to others, we take offense only at what was done to us. There's a film that came out. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It's called Stroke of Genius. Those of you who are golfers, it's about Bobby Jones from Scotland, I think it was. And Bobby Jones was an amateur. He never took any money from his golfing. And yet he set records that have not yet been broken. But he was the greatest golfer, I guess they say, that ever lived. But he never took a penny for it. He was an amateur. He made his money as a lawyer. He made his living as a lawyer. One day in this film, the door of his office opened up, and here came this man, red-faced, and he just says, I'm going to sue his britches off of him. And Bobby Jones said, what's the matter? What happened? He said, sit down and tell me about it. He said, the man told me to go to hell. I said, well, yeah. He said, well, frankly, he said, I think I would just let it slide. Yeah, but he said he told me to go to hell. Bobby Jones said, yeah. He said, I've checked the law on that. You don't have to go. Yeah. Don't wear your feelings on your sleeve. He never got angry or he never took offense at what was done to him. You know where he got angry? You know where he took offense? If his father was deprived of his honor, then look out. Katie barred the door. He was like a bull in a china shop. You remember when the temple was being desecrated? They were in there selling stuff, cattle and sheep and birds and exchanging money and ripping off the poor people. He came in there and he was so mad he had a whip, had a weapon in his hand, had a whip, and he began to drive out the cattle. He began to loose the sheep. He began to turn loose the doves. He overturned the tables of the money changers and he said, get out of here. How dare you turn my father's house into a market? And they were so stunned. But he was angry because God wasn't being given his honor. The poor people were being ripped off. You could buy a sheep outside the temple for 1/7 the cost that it took to buy one of those that had been approved by the priest. Little children. When little children were deprived of their right to come to him, he became indignant. How do you describe indignance? Righteous indignation. But he just became, he just became indignant. That's a pretty strong word. Well, indignant is just simply that he was maybe infuriated. He became furious. Or the sick people. Remember there was a woman that came, he was in the synagogue one day, and a woman came in who had been bent over for 18 years. You remember that? And it was Saturday. It was the Sabbath. And he knew that. And he could have said to her, looked at his watch or looked at the sun and said, well, honey, it's about 15 minutes before sundown and the Sabbath will be over. You come back and I'll take care of you then. Uh-uh. Jesus said, no, that's enough. 18 years is long enough. He said, come here. And he took hold of her and he said, you're loose from your infirmity. And she stood up. For the first time in 18 years, she stood up. We've got about 18 minutes left. Let's just all stand, if you will, and just bend over all the way down and just stay there just for 18 minutes, all right? What's the matter? This poor lady was that way for 18 years. And when Jesus, when he released her, the ruler of the synagogue said, I've got an announcement to make. There are 6 days on which people ought to work. You come then and be healed, and not on the Sabbath. That was the wrong announcement. Jesus said, you hypocrite. You hypocrite. Which of you, having an ox or a mule, doesn't loose him on the Sabbath day and lead him away to water? Shouldn't this woman, this daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound for lo these 18 years, be loosed on the Sabbath? Said his accusers were embarrassed. They were humiliated, I think the word is. There was a man in the synagogue again, Mark records it. He had a shriveled hand. The other hand was good, but his hand was shriveled and it was of no value. And so they were watching to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. And he said to the man, come up here and stand in front of everybody. He said, I'm going to make a public example. Come and stand up in front of everybody. And then he asked them this question. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or bad? Is it lawful to heal or to kill? And said, they just sat there and stared at him. And then he stared around at them in anger and said to the man, extend your hand. And he extended his hand and it was restored. Jesus became angry only when the people were deprived of their rights or God was deprived of his honor. Then he just simply, he let it fly. There's a fourth principle. Let's name the first three. Number one is what? Take the first step. Number two, go the second mile. Number three, don't wear your feelings on your sleeve. And then number four is serve rather than be served. Serve rather than be served. Can you say that with me? Serve rather than be served. Here's the scene. 26 filthy feet gathered around a table. And when I say filthy feet, I mean filthy feet. Have you ever been to Nazareth and seen the latrine and the trough in the middle of the street where donkeys are supposed to walk and drop and do their thing? Well, if you haven't, donkeys don't know that, you know, you're supposed to walk in that slot. They just let it fly wherever they are. They don't say, pardon me, I've got to go to the bathroom. The women donkeys, are there women donkeys? The women donkeys, the female donkeys don't say, pardon me, I'm going to go powder my nose. No, it's just everywhere. And people who walk, even though it's been swept up, people who walk through it. And here were these 26 dirty feet around this table, and the feet that belonged to 12 of them, the people who owned the 12 feet, or the 24 feet, there were 12 of the, 24 feet, they were arguing about who of them was the greatest. And I don't doubt one whit but what they were arguing, because they didn't want to be the one to do the washing of the feet. John records what Jesus did, and you know what it was. He took off his coat, wrapped a towel around him, and poured some water in a basin, and went around and started washing those 24 filthy feet. And they were so shocked by it. Simon Peter said, well, you're not going to wash mine. Jesus said, Peter, unless I wash you, you don't have any part with me. You know why Jesus was able to do that? He says three things.
I want you to look at your Bibles, turn to John, the 13th chapter, and it's so clearly laid out in John 13 and John 15 that you mustn't miss it. I want you to see it in print. In John 13, verse 34, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you're my disciples, if you love one another. And then turn over to the 15th chapter in verse 12. My command is this, that you love each other as I've loved you. And then look at verse 17. This is my command. Love each other. That's the only way you're ever going to be served. Or you're going to serve rather than be served. That's the only way you're ever going to take the initiative to go to other people and get things settled. That's the only way you're ever going to be willing to go the second mile. It's the only way you're ever going to be willing to go through life without your feelings being on your sleeve. My goodness. Kids, if you'll set that light and set that example in school, Jesus gave us the example. If you'll set that example in your school, all of the hostility and all that's going on in your schoolroom will gradually begin to melt away because they'll begin to see you as a peacemaker. And it's a whole lot more fun living in peace. It's not any fun living in all the animosity that goes on today in schoolrooms. That's not fun. But somebody's got to break through. Somebody's got to take the initiative. If you just do what other people are doing, he says, what are you doing more than others? If you just love your friends, you're not doing anything more than the ones that are doing evil are doing. If you just salute your friends, if you just love your friends, but you know what he said? Take the initiative. Love your enemies. Pray for those that persecute you. Do good to those that would harm you. It's our job. That's what peacemakers do. Now, if you're just a peace lover, if you're just a peace lover, you're just going to kind of grab a seat over there away from everybody and just sit and let everybody destroy themselves. But that's not what he calls us to be. He calls us to be peacemakers. Okay, here we go. Number one is do what? Take the first step. Number two, go the second mile. Number three, go on your sleeve. Number four, serve rather than be served. And the only way you're ever going to be able to do these four is to love other people like he has loved us. That's the way peacemaking works. Well, are you a peacemaker or just a peace lover? When I look at these kids over here, bless your hearts. Are you peacemakers or just peace lovers? In your family, try it in your home. Some of your homes are like living in hell. Try being a peacemaker in your homes. See what happens. Come back and report next week. Try being a peacemaker. When somebody takes advantage of you, just be a peacemaker, not just a peace lover. What about us in our homes, us older ones? Did you fight in the car coming to church this morning? Some of our families probably had a knockdown, drag out Donnybrook coming to church. You need to get it settled. You need to get it settled. Jesus Christ will not tolerate unresolved conflict. That's what he thinks about it. He says unresolved conflict must be resolved. Because he himself is the King of Peace, and he calls us to be people of peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they should be called the sons of God.